Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Good evening, I'm Roger Watterson with another of Manx Radio's election programmes in which we talk to a retiring member of the House of Keys seeking re-election in September. With me in the studio today is Kate Beecroft, who will be contesting once more the constituency of Douglas South, now with 4,488 voters. She's the leader of the Liberal Vannin Party, and with 1,191 votes, she was first elected in 2011. Since becoming party leader, she's been likened to Margaret Thatcher, and she's also revealed aspirations to bring more women into the House of Keys. Why Margaret Thatcher, Kate? Are you the Iron Lady in the party?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't consider myself that, but other people have sort of commented on it. But I mean, it's just a joke. I think.
You hope. Right. Well, your slogan and the party slogan has been now since its start was "Politics to the People." What does that mean?
Well, it's bringing back politics to the people is the full strapline, and it actually means that we start from the grassroots up, rather than it's not top down structure. Any of our members can bring policies twice a year to our meetings and debate them and have them voted on. And if the majority support them, then they become the party's policy. So and they vote on everybody else's policies as well. So it genuinely is. It's a grassroots political party. As I say, it's from the bottom up rather than the top down.
That would, I would have thought, lead to quite a mishmash sometimes, a sort of a stew of different ideas. Surely there must be some coordinating thought running through the middle of this.
Well, obviously, we are a liberal party, so we're sort of for freedom for everybody, equality for everybody, all that sort of thing. So it can't clash with anything that are our basic tenets, but anything else. But surprisingly enough, there very rarely is a clash.
Mm-hmm. In the sense that what? In
of ideas.
Aims or objectives or just ideas?
Ideas. Policies coming forward. It's very rare that there is because people tend to talk about them and iron out any creases, if you like, before they bring them along.
Now, you're talking about people. How many members do you have?
That's a good question. I haven't asked our membership secretary lately. It was over 100 the last time I asked, but I really couldn't give you the accurate.
Yeah, and these are not just as a member of the House of Keys, but some local authority members and then a general public.
Yes, paid up members of the party.
Right, okay. Now, at the 2011 general election, the party produced a manifesto which I think was meant to be something for all. It contained an enormous number of issues which you said that you would tackle. And I was looking just through some of them this morning and there was dozens, but negotiate a better reciprocal arrangements with the UK, open discussions to join the European Free Trade Area, secure London City and other landing rights, only approve capital projects following a review of published cost-benefit analysis, promote the island as a destination for choice for specialist healthcare, and introduce measures to address the financial problems of an ageing population. Now, those are just half a dozen of, probably, which were dozens and dozens and dozens of things. I mean, was it, and so much more, how much of that was just window dressing to pull votes, and how much did you think you were going to do?
Well, it wasn't window dressing at all. I mean, if you look at the healthcare one, the specialist, become a destination for specialist healthcare, there's no reason why we can't be. If you could encourage a world leader in whatever specialty, particularly one that would be appropriate here, there's no reason why they can't have their clinic here, their operating theatres here and everything, and people would then come here for that particular operation. I mean, people travel from the UK worldwide for specific operations. Why wouldn't they come here? You could encourage that.
I can see the idea, but what I'm trying to get at is the practicality of being able to achieve it. How would the Liberal Vannin Party bring that about?
Well, it would be an awful lot easier if we were in government, wouldn't it? And that is exactly what a manifesto is. It's what we would do if we were in government. You can't achieve it if you're a backbencher.
We may come to this bit about being in government at the moment, but just at the moment, it does seem to be seen as the unofficial opposition to the Council of Ministers.
It does, and I wish people would stop thinking that way and portraying us that way, because if we are the the opposition, we're doing a very bad job of it because we actually agree with them about 90% of the time. So we're not a very good opposition, if that's what we're to be called.
Those other 10%, mind you, are often the very high-profile cases.
Well, of course they are, because the media aren't going to report and go headlines, everybody agreed on this, are they? That doesn't make for good media coverage. They're going to report, oh, there was a difference of opinion on this and it got a bit heated, etc. That sells papers. That makes your listeners listen to what you're saying as well.
Mm. Well, why is the perception there that perhaps the party, when I say opposition, it also criticises very often? There's continual layer of criticism and without very often any solutions offered.
Well, I'm sorry, if you're talking about criticising, we criticised, for example, the Sefton deal. There wasn't a solution to that. Mm. But it doesn't stop us saying that was actually wrong and we were proven right. It was wrong.
We criticised Pinewood, yep, and still do.
Absolutely. To me, it's like going to the casino and putting a load of money on red. If it comes up, happy days. It doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. And we've still got a long way to go before we actually recover the money when you take in the Media Development Fund. Mm. So we're still losing out at the moment.
Yes. So when you say you believe doing the right thing in support for 90% of the time, can you illustrate that? What sort of things do you think that the present government is doing correctly?
Well, I think a lot of the stuff to do with the economy, it's getting right, obviously, because we're still in growth. And we've supported an awful lot that's gone through Tynwald. Mm. I mean, I couldn't pick out individual issues, to be honest, off the top of my head. When you support that many, it's hard to think of one when you suddenly ask, isn't it? Mm.
Is this a problem, do you think, within Tynwald, that the genders are full of all sorts of mixed business and it's very difficult to do your homework and actually know sometimes what it's about?
I think it's a huge amount of work to get through, yes. Mm. To read everything and to pick up on the things that may not be sitting quite right. I mean, you can skim read it, but it doesn't mean that you've picked up on things that you should be picking up on.
Mm. Do you have a research in the party behind you? Do you have people who go looking at these things for you?
Well, Laurie Hooper, for example, he's our finance guy, obviously, because he's a chartered accountant. I mean, he's standing in Ramsey for us. Mm. So he has a look at anything to do with finance and the number crunching behind that. We're very lucky that way. There's certain other individuals that for specific things we can go to. But there's no formal advisory team, if you like.
So how do you, where do you go for your advice other than somebody who's got the ability to go ferreting a bit within your own organisation? I mean, do you find that the advice that you are given in your day-to-day job from the administration is normally reliable?
I always like to find from the other side. Mm. I mean, you get the information about a motion that's going to Tynwald, and then you usually have a briefing for Tynwald members where you can ask any questions. But that's very, very helpful. But you still need to have another look at it and go back over it again. But I find that people contact me now, people that I don't know, have never met even half the time, and give me information and say, I worked in this industry and you need to be careful of this, which I think is great. It's really kind of these people. Mm. They obviously care about what happens in the Isle of Man to do that.
You have and are on record for saying that you will, I quote, continue our work to scrutinise every decision the Isle of Man government makes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we get paid to do.
Every decision.
Yeah. Mm. Isn't that what we get paid to do?
But I don't know, is it?
Well, I would have thought so. We go to Tynwald, we've got to vote one way or another. Mm. If you haven't looked at it properly and decided which way you're going to vote and got your reasons for it, why would you be voting? Why are you sitting there?
Scrutiny for scrutiny's sake, though, perhaps is not a good idea, is it? Just because you feel obliged to.
But if you're not doing your job if you're not scrutinising it. You know, you're either in government or you're scrutinising what they're doing. Mm. You can't just go along with the flow and go, oh, government says, let's do this, so that's got to be all right, so I'm not going to bother reading this properly. That is not doing your job right in my book.
So what is that the reason why you ask so many questions in general?
Probably. Yeah, because I want the answers. Sometimes I'm asking them for people, I'm asking them for members of the party, I'm asking them for constituents, whatever the reason.
So what do you do with the answers?
Sometimes they get followed up on, sometimes the answers are fine and there's no further action needed. I have a file at home for following up on things, which I bring out periodically. Anything that's really hot, obviously, you follow it up there and then. Sometimes you need more information before you can follow it up, and it can be a month or so before you can table another question.
But if you get answers to questions and you want to take them further, what I'm trying to say is it costs quite a lot of money to ask a question in Tynwald these days. With the research for the answer, we've already had the figures for various different things for different times. I mean, do you think that questioning in public is the way to do it? I mean, we often used to be informed that probably getting hold of somebody in his office and talking it over with them would get just as good a result.
Sometimes these things need to be put into the public domain. Yeah. And that's why you do it. And if they've already given you the answers at different times, then it doesn't cost any more to give you them again, does it?
Well, here we are 5 years down the road since the last election. Is the party getting results? Is it achieving what you set out in the last manifesto? All that list of shopping
Well, no,
list?
Because we weren't in government. So we can't achieve what's in our manifesto if we haven't been in government. One thing that has heartened me, that I do think great progress has been made in people's minds about it and their thinking on it, is the programme for government, which I first raised when I brought a motion about collective responsibility to Tynwald, because that's something they do in Northern Ireland. And I was quite impressed with the way, the openness of how they did it there. And I raised it then. And it seems to be gaining some traction now. There's more and more people talking about a programme for government. And I think that would be a huge step forward, and I would feel that I've been part of achieving that if it happens.
But a programme for government, of course, is based on people knowing what is needed and what's wanted to be achieved.
Mm.
Now, that's not very, that's very difficult in our present political system, isn't it? I mean, a great deal of the public do not understand the workings of government, and even when they are told what's going on, either don't understand it or believe it.
No, this would be after the election, because you can't change everything overnight. The Chief Minister and the Council of Ministers should get together and form this programme for government. And then that would be published. That would be what the Cabinet, if you want to call it, all the ministers would have to stick to. They've agreed to that. They've signed up to that. That is their collective responsibility. Outside of that, anything would be a free vote. But everybody would know what they've signed up to. You wouldn't have this almost party politics by stealth, where they form a party after the election and then pretend they're still independents, which is what happens now. It's a dishonest system. This is an honest way forward. And it gives the ministers that choice about whether to vote for things that are outside of the programme for government, whether they choose to support them or not, instead of having to.
Well, you refer there to being in government and the implication. And in some of your literature I've seen quite recently, you're still referring to a Lib Van government.
Mm-hmm.
How can you achieve that? I mean, how would government be attained? How would power be brought about? Because there's no prospect of that by sheer numbers. You're not fielding enough candidates, for instance, to cover
We're not this time, but we are forming alliances, the same as all independent MHKs have. So it depends on the numbers after the election.
But you'd need 13 in your camp, wouldn't
you? Yes,
you
do. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, is that the 13 in the House, or is it an idea to have Liberal Van Inn people in the majority on the Council of Ministers?
I don't think you'd have Liberal Van Inn people in the majority in the Council of Ministers when we're only fielding three at the moment.
Well, it's the supporters then.
Yeah. Supporters would be very nice, yes. Mm.
So there is... How realistic do you think it is when you go to the electorate to say, if you vote for us, we'll form a government?
I think it's as realistic as anybody else going. In fact, obviously more so, because we have three candidates. So it's three times, or what's in our manifestos are going to be three times more likely of happening than an independence.
Well, let's for a moment move off the Liberal Van Inn and the basic party stuff and bring it to you, Kate Beecroft, as the individual.
Okay.
Now, the last 5 years haven't been all that smooth for you, have you? What makes you want to go back for more?
Because I haven't set out what I achieved to do. I feel I've learned an awful lot, and I do feel that I've achieved something. The first couple of years, people were still asking me, are you enjoying being an MHK? And I had to be honest and said, well, for me, enjoying something is when you actually achieve things. And for the first 2 years, I really didn't feel that I'd achieved that much. I'd helped individuals, but I really hadn't achieved that much. But after that, I've started having achievements, and it's a very nice feeling to feel that you've helped a lot of people by changing that particular thing.
Could you give me an illustration of that?
Yes, the health, for example. I've been pushing for independent reviews for, 6 to 8 weeks after I got elected, and they finally agreed to them. So I'm delighted about that, and I think that is going to help. We still need an independent regulator. The reviews aren't finished, but they certainly showed that they needed to be done, shall we say, given the percentage of pass marks that's in some of those reports. It certainly needs looking at again rather than just once.
Well, it's a difficult job. I think we would all accept that, especially the balancing of local, national, international issues, and they're all jumbled together in the same stew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the most difficult things probably to handle, the expectations of your electorate alongside today's financial reality.
Do you know, I think people are very reasonable if you actually talk to them and explain to them what's happening. There's very few people I've come across that are totally blinkered and totally unreasonable about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Most people will understand, and most people understand more than you think they do before you even start.
Well, you will have to see, or we will have to see now, just how many women become elected in this parliament. Well, there are some standing, but...
Mm-hmm.
And how many are successful in their quest to become elected.
Yeah.
Now, I know you, one of your ambitions has been to see more women in the House. I mean, how and do you think it's possible to bring more women into the House of Keys?
I actually wouldn't say it's been one of my ambitions, Roger. Everybody keeps talking to me about it because I'm the only woman in there now.
I think you're on record of saying you'd like to see more.
I would like to see more, but you made it sound like it was a real burning ambition of mine. And it's just, I want to see the best people elected for the job. I actually don't care whether they're men or women. If they're the best people, then they're the ones who want in there. I think it has been proven, and I have said before, that all organisations function better if there's a better balance within that organisation. So, yes, we want a better functioning Parliament. So, yes, therefore, we need a better balance within it. But I still come back to the fact that we need the right person, the best person for the job.
Why do you think it's so few women in the past have stood for election?
Possibly because they see what happens in there and think, I don't want to be party to that. It's seen very much as an old boys club, which will be off-putting for a lot of people. I don't know.
Yeah. But did you see it that way?
I just got angry about things and decided I was going to try and change things.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are two issues, isn't there, really, with women. One is the number of women standing, and second is the quality of them.
That applies to men as well, Roger.
Of course it does. But the ratio is different
yes.
in this case. So if we do have this, the House comes together. You're also on record for saying that you thought that the present system of government and administration, I mean, can it cope with it? You're on record for saying it's broken.
I do think it's broken, because I don't think it's democratic. If you're meant to be living in a democracy and you believe your parliament is undemocratic, then that system is broken.
Well, can you give me an illustration of why you say that? Because people listening tonight might say, well, it's working.
Yes, it's working. It doesn't mean it's democratic and it doesn't mean it's not broken. The big thing for me is collective responsibility and the extension of that. Because depending on which minister you're working with, depends whether he holds you to collective responsibility within the department or not. Then you have the Treasury members. That once something has been through Treasury, they're held to collective responsibility as well. I remember once bringing up, there was a motion brought forward rather by the Minister for Economic Development at the time. And I stood up and I said I did have some things to say on this, but I'd actually worked out that he had it in the bag before he opened his mouth. So I thought I was wasting my breath. And I waited to be jumped on, as they usually did, and go, oh, Mrs. Beecroft doesn't understand what she's talking about. And nobody contradicted me. Because I was right. There were 17 votes in the bag already out of 32. That is not democratic. That system is broken that allows any minister to go into Tynwald knowing he's going to win no matter what he says.
So what can you do to fix it?
You change collective responsibility. It doesn't apply. You have one departmental member.
But you can't get by without some of it. I mean,
no, you can't. That's what I said about the programme of government I mentioned earlier. That is your collective responsibility. So your big targets, your most the priority stuff that you really need to deal with in that administration, you have collective responsibility. But you don't have it on all the nonsense that crops up during the five-year term.
Mm. Now, there are some issues which you're now going to talk about as you go to the electorate as the weeks now go by. Now, some of the items that I've seen on some of your early literature says that you're going to ensure that the basic pension is sufficient to provide an acceptable standard of living.
Yes.
Now, there's a lot of debate about the state pension at the moment, and it's generally accepted that it's not going to do that. So how will you do that?
Well, I think you have to, again, be honest to people and say there are various ways we can achieve this, but this is why we want a tax and welfare commission, so that you have a look. Because they're tied together, they're inextricable. We need the commission to have a look at it and say, these are the options, this is what's going to happen if you do this. And then you need to go back to the people and say, look, this is what we think. Do you agree with us?
Mind you, experience in the UK recently have shown that forms of referenda are not always a good idea.
Now, I'm not talking about referenda, I'm talking about informal consultation, which we have all the time here.
Yes. Well, looking at the future, I mean, the new House of Keys comes together and off it goes, and it's this time I think it's got to hit the ground with its feet running. There's plenty to do.
Certainly has. It's not going to be an easy 5 years, that's for sure.
What do you see as that the future holds?
Oh, gosh. Obviously, financially, it's going to be a very difficult time.
Got a cough.
Yes, I have. Sorry about that. It always comes on at the wrong moment, doesn't it? Right, it's a right tickle. Mm. Never mind. Financially, it's going to be a very difficult 5 years. We still don't know what the outcome of all the Brexit negotiations are going to be, and that really is outside of our control. But we have to keep a very sharp eye on everything that's happening there. I think that is going to be one of the biggest issues that can affect us that we can't control in the next 5 years. Mm.
And as far as your priorities are concerned, what will they be?
It has to be sorting the public sector pension, resolving government finances. I think everybody has agreed on that. Again, going back to the programme of government, I would love to see that introduced. If that isn't introduced this next time, I would certainly like to see collective responsibility revised and at least publicised somewhere so people know why people seem to be voting against their manifestos, which they do because they have to. They've signed up to collective responsibility. I would dearly love to see an independent health regulator appointed because I think that would solve an awful lot of the problems that we have at the moment. As I say, we can have the reviews, but nobody is forced to take any notice of them. They can be shelved. We don't know who's going to be health minister next time. We don't know if the work that's currently undertaken at the moment to try to comply with West Midlands reviews is going to continue. There's no legal obligation.
Well, now we're right at the end of the programme, Kate. So let me put a quick question to you for a fairly fast answer now.
Okay.
On the 22nd of September, you'll be asking the voters of Douglas South to put a cross against your name.
Yes, I will.
Why should they do that? What's in it for them?
Well, I hope that they've seen what I've done over the last 5 years. I hope they've seen that I've worked hard and I have achieved some things. And I hope that they will trust me for the next 5 years to carry on doing that.
Mm. Now, you're going to have some problems, aren't you, getting around the constituency just at the moment, you were saying, on the way in?
Yes. I've got a dodgy hip, unfortunately. So I had a hip replacement in last November, but the left hip needs doing at some point. So I'm not as nimble on my feet as I used to be. So I'm a bit slower going round. So whilst I'm going to try to get and knock on everybody's door, I'm really not sure if it's actually achievable this time because, as I say, I'm just so slow walking round.
Do you think the new constituency with the change in boundaries will make much difference to you?
For getting round it, yes, it will. But even though it's smaller now, I still think I'm going to struggle to get to every door, which is always the ambition of every potential MHK.
Right. Well, Kate Beecroft, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Roger.
And here we must end this election programme in which we've been talking to Kate Beecroft, the current leader of the Liberal Vannin Party. She's the retiring MHK for Douglas South and will be seeking re-election to that constituency in the September general election. The programme was produced by Catherine Nicol. I'm Roger Watterson, and good evening from us all.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys General Election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.